From an early age, we're all immersed in sport. For some, it fails to ignite a spark inside us, but for those of us who catch the fire, it's the beginning of a lifelong journey filled with highs and lows, which all matter far more than they should. After all, it's just a game, we're told. Sport is a certainty, it's a point of reference in an increasingly uncertain world, and the bonds formed with either sport in general or a hometown club transcend both time and generations. Today, much of what sport has always meant to true fans has been somehow lost in a blizzard of corporate communications, fireworks, and froth. The attachments that were once so strong seem more trivial in the global age of televised sport as entertainment. What was once authentic has become increasingly staged. In this podcast, we'll get back to the things that sport has always meant to true fans. We'll take you from the boardroom to the dressing room to the pitch, but we'll do it not as a corporate communication, but as true fans of sport, and we'll do it with authenticity. We'll be honest, and we'll speak our minds. This is a podcast for true sports fans, and the one thing all fans have in common is a passion for the game. Now, we certainly don't mean to cause any offence, so if you find yourself taking any, just shrug it off and get back in the game, because this is about the game, and the game is bigger than all of us.
We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
Listen.
Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? It's nice to be back, Rog. You did a great job filling in me last week.
How are you, my friend? How are you?
I am a lot better than I was, I gotta say. I was. It takes a lot to knock me over, but this thing knocked me down, reversed back over me, and then sat on my chest for about a week.
Well, you've got to be careful, you know. Like, we're no longer 25, Grant. You really got to be careful.
You speak for yourself. I'm 25 next birthday again, Roger, and I refuse to be told any different.
Good for you. No, listen, missed you a lot. You know, you left me with the bloody millennials. And, you know, like, they come out with stuff like five old guys in a members room in a private members club. It's a hard shift out there if we don't stick together.
Well, look, I mean, it, you can't fault. It was a pretty good call, and that's pretty much what it was. It just so happened to be incredibly enjoyable as well, which I certainly am not repentful for in any way, shape, or form. It was a really cracking afternoon.
We've had some great feedback from the series of the meetings, the three parts. Some of it incredibly surprising. So obviously, with whatever size of audience we have, some of it really resonates, and that's good. That's good.
I think so. And when you're talking about sport and sports fans are listening, there's always something in there you can kind of latch onto.
Well, but I have to say, I'd like to say thanks to Mike again, because it was a very short notice and he came on and I thought he was fantastic. You know, I thought he really, really spoke very well, made some cogent points, didn't agree with everything, but, you know, it was intellectually a very high standard.
Oh, I did a great job. I think it was nice for you to have someone of that different generation to spar with. It was, as a listener for a change, I really enjoyed listening to it, I've got to say. I think Mike did a fantastic job.
Good. So listen, let's get back on the horse again. And why don't you start with your goal this week?
Yes, all right, I'll do that. Why don't I start that? Now, my goal this week, Lindsey Vonn, who retired last week, I think it was now, just an immense career, an incredible athlete, and to see her actually take the podium in that last race of hers, it wasn't quite the fairy tale finish. It was looking like it for a while. You know, she held first place for a little while until a couple of women came past her. But it was just an amazing end to what has been an incredible career. You know, it's sad that a lot of people knew her as Tiger Woods' girlfriend, which is just criminal when you look at the achievements that she's had as a skier. I mean, she really has changed the sport.
Was she the one in the car, Grant? The one with the...
No. She was, after all the Tiger shenanigans, she was his kind of first girlfriend once he split up with his wife.
Oh, and, so she got him back on track.
Well, yeah, you would have to assume so. Who knows?
Good for her.
But listen, no, let's not talk about Tiger Woods. This has nothing to do with him. This woman is an incredible athlete, and you know, just for someone to really change the sport. I mean, she was almost as fast as the men, and did in fact want to race against the men. I'm still amazed in this era of made for TV spectaculars why she never ended up racing a man on some sort of prime time event. But you know, she had 4 World Cup titles, she had 3 Olympic medals, including a gold, 82 wins in World Cup events, which is just 4 shy of the all-time record. But just had some incredible injuries, some incredible comebacks. It really is just a glittering career. And so to see it finish the way it did, with her on the podium, was just fantastic for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And you know, the fact that she had a crash right before this final race, she smashed her ribs up and suffered a black eye. You know, gets up and then gets a bronze medal in the final race of her career. So that my goal by a long way was Lindsey Vonn. This is just fantastic.
Well, that's nice to hear. I have to admit that in recent years, I've kind of like distanced myself, not intentionally, from winter sports. My peak was around the time of Tomba. So,
or as they're called in Scotland, sports.
That's very good. No, it's from the time of Alberto Tomba, when it was really at the peak. So I must admit, I haven't followed her career as closely as I should have. But what I want to ask you is, what do you think set her apart from everybody else that she was competing against?
Roger? I think she's just one of those athletes, you know, that comes along at a point in time and is just better than everybody else. And she just had this tenacity, this excitement about her when she would race. I mean, she didn't hold anything back. She was just tremendous to watch. And I don't know, it's one of those athletes that just has that X factor that makes you want to watch them, you know. Same with golf. When Tiger's not playing, I'm not really that interested in the tournament. When he's playing and he's in contention, you want to watch it. And it was the same with Lindsey Vonn. You know, you kind of expected to see something. You'd see a fast time, a spectacular crash, but you would see someone going hell for leather down that hill on two pieces of wood, scaring the bejesus out of me. But she was just something to watch. You know, just amazing, amazing to see her in full flow.
So, from what you're telling me, I can guess that the rights holder must be like crying their eyes out just now that she's departing the scene, because she had the whole package, didn't she, as an attraction?
She did. Yep, she really did. She was, you know, graceful. She was attractive. She could. You know, she's very erudite. She was a competitor. I mean, she had the whole package, and you know, she did a lot for skiing, and she will definitely be missed. There's no two ways about it. I mean, she's arguably the greatest American skier of all time, male or female. So it's you know, her and Bodie Miller are probably the two names that people know, but I think Vonn has eclipsed him in terms of success. She eclipsed Peekaboo Street, and she eclipsed Tamara McKinney before her, and just one of those athletes that raised their sport to a whole new level. So it was sad to see her retire, but great to see her go out on top.
Well, let me ask you this: in the theme these days that's been talked about a lot, you might not know this, but Do you believe that she was on an equal remuneration scheme as the men skiers, or are women still behind in that area of the industry?
I would be flabbergasted if she was on the same sort of money as the men, particularly in skiing. But I know her sponsorship money would have been exceptional. I mean, she was the one thing about skiing, I guess you can say about it in terms of equality, is that in terms of recognition amongst the fans, if you're a skiing aficionado, there really isn't an awful lot between the men and the women.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that her commercial deals were up there with some of the male stars, particularly in the US. But I would have thought prize money, and I don't know enough about it to speak smartly about it, Roger, but I would think the prize money in men's skiing would dwarf that of women's skiing for some bizarre reason.
Well, I mean, I would have thought that was one of the sports that it shouldn't, you know.
It shouldn't,
It shouldn't. And the reason I kind of, you know, led us down that part of the conversation is that you probably didn't see it as you were in your sick bed, but there was a question in the UK Parliament at Westminster from, as it turned out, a woman MP who was questioning Theresa May, the Prime Minister, quoting the different amounts of money that had gone to women's teams playing in the FA Women's Cup compared to men's team playing in the FA Cup for men. And the Prime Minister went through the classic answer. You know, obviously that information is concerning and something we should study. However, it's one for the football authorities. Where the obvious answer is, the rights holder distributes the money it gets from the broadcasters and the sponsors. And guess what? Women's football, whatever way you cut it, is just not earning as much money as men's. So they get a lot less money. But, you know...
Well, look, that's fair. I mean, look, at the end of the day, non-league teams don't get paid the same as Premier League players. You're right. It's definitely a function of the money that is generated by the sport.
Well, it's obvious. It's obvious, no? It's absolutely obvious. But, you know, this is where every normal person's attempts to try and make things equal get derailed by such stupidity with a question like that. That's then given the credence to be responded by the Prime Minister without saying, don't be so stupid, you know? But, you know,
as you said that, I'm listening thinking, what the hell is Theresa May going to say about this? What the hell? What's she supposed to know about it?
Well, there you go. That's our parliamentary democracy. One asks a question and she replies. And we waste another 5 minutes of life that we will never get back.
Good grief. We will never get back indeed. All right. Well, look, what do you got for this week for either a goal or an own goal?
Well, the goal, I was struggling a little bit. And then all of a sudden it came to me right at the end. We're recording this on the 18th of February, which is the birthday of Roberto Baggio. I want to tell my own personal story about Roberto Baggio. Obviously, I loved him as a player and everything that he did. Although I must admit, he wasn't in that holy trinity of him, Del Piero and Totti. He wasn't my favourite, although most people would say he was. But his impact in the 1990 World Cup when he broke through and that wonderful goal, I think, against Czechoslovakia, through his career at Fiorentina, obviously then Juventus, and onwards to the 94 World Cup where he basically dragged Italy to the final, clawing back the game against Nigeria, winning the semi-final with two goals. And then that's just sport, isn't it? The penalty miss. But then the amazing thing about Roberto Baggio as an athlete was that as he got older, he moved to what one would consider lesser teams like Bologna and then ultimately Brescia. So much so that he was almost recalled to the national team for subsequent World Cups. And he would have been if it hadn't kind of like caused some political issues with specifically Totti. But, you know, if you remember, at Brescia, he is the protagonist of one of the all-time great YouTube clips where a very young, pimpled Andrea Pirlo in midfield makes one of those passes that would become very famous in the years ahead, and Baggio runs onto it in the channel. It comes over his shoulder and he performs a cushion control whilst at the same time taking it around the goalkeeper, which I've never seen before or since. And if anybody hasn't seen that, look it out on YouTube. Pirlo, Baggio, Brescia. And it is one of the truly astonishing pieces of technique and goals. So Baggio is an icon. And I had the fortune to run into him around about 2013 because after the 2010 World Cup, where Italy had done very badly, he was brought in by the Italian FA to do the classic review of youth development and where did we go all wrong and what do we need to do and why are the Germans better and all the usual stuff. And he went in there, but he only lasted about a month before the Blazers and their way of acting and their obtuseness and their lack of innovation drove him out. So for some reason, I ended up taking his plan that he'd developed in the Italian FA, ideally into the private sector, which was going to become the Roberto Baggio University, which would have been a forerunner of some of the ones you get just now, where football links with a normal university and you get a proper degree, whether it's around coaching or whether it's around the business of sport, whatever. Anyway, the point of the story was that for, I would say, about 6 months, I was quite close to Roberto Baggio in the work sense, and I had the opportunity to spend some time with him. And he was such an illuminating guy, because some people may not know, but he became a Buddhist, and he's quite a deep person, and he feels a lot of things are messages or lessons in life and things like that. Everything you would understand with the Buddhist religion, which, you know, is very mystic. And anyway, at the same year as I was, you know, quite close to him, he went to the Italian festival called Sanremo, which is about their Brit Awards or their Grammys, as a special guest. And he was asked to read out a message to the young kids, which he did. And that's what I would really like to make as my goal of this week, where it's only 3 minutes. It's on YouTube. I don't think there is in subtitles, but basically, you know, the message is, I want to speak to all the young kids of Italy, of which three are in the audience, my three kids. And three messages I want to give you. Whatever you do, make sure it's something that gives you passion and joy, because if you don't find that, you'll never be good at anything. Don't get hung up on what everybody else thinks is success, because success is what you define it to be. It can be still having your family around the table, all being in agreement with each other after 20 years, that could be success for parents. And then the most interesting thing, Grant, was he said, sacrifice. He said, there's nothing in life that is of any value if you've not had to fight for it. It has got no meaning whatsoever. And then he told how, I never knew this, that the injuries that he had as a player, very, very young to his knee, he'd carried through all his career and had played most of his career with cortisone. Believe that or not, it's just astonishing to think that. And at one point, you know, like, you know, you say, well, show me your knee, Roberto. And like, he'll roll up his trouser, and it's really like you can push the kneecap around. It's just like astonishing. He said, look, I played 2 or 3 years like this at the end. And I thought, you know, today being his birthday and that kind of message, if you don't sacrifice, it's not worth it. Anything you get too easily is transient and it won't last the legacy that you're looking for, especially in sport. So I hope that doesn't sound a little bit too worthy and right on, but, you know, Roberto Baggio is an important guy.
Did he talk about the haircut at all?
No. He didn't have that in 2013.
He'd gone. Isn't it funny though? What a wonderful player he was. I just remember that haircut. That terrible.
That's terrible.
Ratty
Grant.
Pony. No, it's terrible. It's terrible. But I associate him with that haircut.
Not the penalty miss.
No, not the penalty miss. I mean, look, that penalty miss, that could happen to anyone in that situation, and he had a fantastic World Cup, I don't know why, but I always associate him with that terrible haircut, Rog. Isn't that awful? I mean, I didn't get to see him play as much as you. I only got to see him play at World Cups, obviously. And I didn't really get to see much of him in Serie A, because at that point in time when he was lighting the league up, it wasn't easy to get access to those games, particularly in the UK. But yeah, it's so funny. I know what a talented footballer he was, but I can't help remembering that haircut.
well, to shift that, I do have to insist you look at that clip on YouTube. Pirlo Baggio Brescia.
I will definitely look it up.
And I swear that cushion control to take it transversal round the goalie in the same movement. It's not two touches, it's one touch. You know, most of us can do a cushion control, but it's vertical, isn't it? You know, like to do it transversal and kill a ball that's coming at pace. I've never seen that before.
I'm going to look it up and hopefully all the people listening will too.
It's a thing of absolute beauty. So only for that goal and for everything that I share with them, and it was nothing in the grand scheme of things, absolutely nothing. But for me, it was. In 2013, at the same time he said those things in Sanremo, happy birthday, Roberto.
Well, that's a great goal, and it gives me something to look at on YouTube when I want to go down the rabbit hole later. Well, look, that brings us neatly to my own goal. And for this, I am going, as I do a fair bit, not through any premeditation on my part, but I'm going to golf. And Matt Kuchar, have you seen this story?
I knew you were going to say that. I didn't choose it because I knew you would have that one.
Yeah. So for those people who didn't hear the story,
I'd love to hear your view on this. I'd love to hear your view.
He played in the Mayakoba Classic in November in Mexico. And he won it. And he won, I think, 1.4 million, I think it was.
1.3
million dollars he won. Now, his caddy didn't make the journey with him, so he hired a local caddy. And before the tournament, they made a deal that the caddy would be paid $1,000 if Kuchar missed the cut, $2,000 if he made the cut, $3,000 if he finished in the top 20, and $4,000 for a top 10. And they didn't actually strike a deal about what would happen if Kuchar won. But Kuchar did win. He won 1.3 million and he gave the guy $5,000. Now, this was in November and it's really surfaced recently because Kuchar was on his way to winning another victory in the Sony Open in Hawaii last month. And Mr. Ortiz, his disgruntled caddy from Mexico, started making a bit of noise about this on social media and it just caught fire. Embarrassing Kuchar. Who put out an apology via his, I guess, PR agent, which you know, was very humble and very meaningful and all that stuff, and obviously very simply written by the PR people. And he subsequently, I think, he's agreed to give the guy $50,000. This story just has a little bit of everything, Rog. You know, it has on the one side you can argue, look, a deal's a deal. We made a deal before the tournament, this is what we get paid. Everyone was happy with it then. Was it cheap? Yeah, of course it was cheap. Did he know he was going to win? No. Did the guy know he was going to win? No. And the guy was very happy with his $4,000 or $5,000 that he made. And Kuchar said at the time, you know, I looked at it that way. I didn't think of it from the other side. But it just shows you in today's world, as a sportsman, the public relations game is arguably the hardest game to play, the hardest game to win. And it's the one where you've got to be focused the entire time. Because did Kuchar do anything wrong? No, he didn't. He didn't. They agreed these terms beforehand. And afterwards, as it turns out, you know, he could have been a bit more generous. Yes, he could have done. But did he do anything wrong, Rog? I don't think he did. But it certainly doesn't make him look very good. It makes him look really cheap. It makes him look like he's taken advantage of this poor guy down in Mexico who's used to earn, you know, $100 a week. And it's blown up spectacularly. So, you know, for the PR disaster more than anything else, in fairness, I've got Matt Kuchar as my own goal this week.
Well, let's try and break that down a little bit, because I've also seen our colleague Steve Martin, who, as you know, is a big golf guy. He's talked a little bit about this, and a lot of people I respect have. So the story starts a little bit that Kuchar is seen as one of the good guys in golf, a nice
correct
guy. And correct me if I'm wrong, Grant, that is shown most obviously when Jordan Spieth wins the Open and spends half an hour looking for his ball that day and Kuchar's in the middle of the fairway. Is that right or something like that? And he doesn't moan and he doesn't make a thing of
yep
it at the end. I believe that's the case. So he's got a reputation of being one of the good guys, one of the gentlemen. He then, as you say, makes a deal. So would this all have blown up if he hadn't won and he'd stayed in the top 10 and he'd given him $4,000, which was exactly...
No, not a chance.
But, well, maybe not. But so he's been penalised for having won and not done something completely out with the deal he had already struck, because if he'd struck those numbers for that performance, tops for a win would have been $10,000 tops. So, you know, has he been criticised for not adjusting it dramatically or for, as you say, taking an advantage at the time of a guy that would have accepted it anyway? Then all blows up and he comes out with a PR statement that I must admit, whether it was done by professionals or whether it was done by him or whether it was hybrid, I thought it was a pretty good statement, Grant.
It was. No, it was. It absolutely was. It was well written. It was heartfelt. There was nothing wrong with it at all.
But however, on social media, by a lot of people that have got a good brain and good values, they said, stinks of fake. Call me a cynic, but all these kind of comments. Yep. And I thought, well, you know, let me have a look again. You know, maybe I read that wrong. Because, you know, I think once I was speaking with Giles and he was talking about how sometimes today's world is so sanctimonious and everybody wants to get on it in the back of everybody else when they seem to have like fallen from standards that, you know, frankly, I don't see these high standards all around in society anywhere. But when somebody in the public eye falls from what could be considered great standards, people are absolutely unloading. I mean, absolutely unloading. So, and I thought, well, no, I still think I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He was clumsy, a little bit superficial, didn't think it through, didn't think of the PR angle, made a mistake, did a great PR statement, end of the story. I'm going to believe him on that. And then you now see clips of him, you know, playing with other people. I think Andrew Coulthard or something like that. And, you know, he apparently like blanks them and gives them the silent treatment when they're on the fairway together. So this guy now, you know, on this incident is ending up being, you know, Lucifer and the devil incarnate on the fairways. And you're absolutely right, Grant. This can't be correct. You know, two things. First of all, those standards, I don't see them around anymore. But secondly, you know, if the guy apologizes, you've got to give him the benefit of the doubt. Especially if he's got a reputation and a set of actions, especially the Jordan Spieth stuff that you say, well, that looked like a pretty balanced guy to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I think you hit the nail on the head, Roger, and this is the thing, right? You can spend your entire career building a reputation for being, you know, being a solid guy and everyone loves you. This one thing happens that, look, everybody makes mistakes. Geez, you know,
He didn't think about it.
The deal's a deal. Here's your money. Thanks very much. Just probably didn't think about it. And obviously then all the people that want everything to be right and fair come out and pick the guy apart. He apologized. He said, you know what? Yeah, I was wrong. I'm going to pay him 10 times what I said I'd pay him. You know, that should be the end of it. I mean, it really should be the end of it.
I agree.
But this problem with the court of public opinion and people just won't let the stuff lie, and talk shows and sports shows and internet blogs, and everybody wants a piece of this. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, you don't have the chance anymore if you're a sportsman to make a simple error like we all do. I mean, it's an error in judgment on his part, which he's admitted to. It really shouldn't be such a big deal, but I'm reading about this thing. You know, this is what, 3 months after the event, and I must have read a dozen articles on this week. I'm thinking, it's over. The guy's apologized, done more than what he should have done to make it up to the guy. Why are we still talking about it?
Well, let's assume that you're not here today, and we've still got Mike Keel here, and I would be saying to him, so do you think this is a generational thing? Because here's a theory, and I might be wrong. Guys like you and me, Grant, we've seen more than younger kids. And we know pretty much close up the amount of compromise and double dealing and suboptimal values that happens in every walk in life, every single one. So does that mean that maybe we're prepared to give people a little bit more of a break than kids that are living on a set of values that is idealistic? They haven't, you know, got old enough to realize that the world is 60 shades of gray. I think there's something in that. And I think I've used this before. And if I have, apologize, but you know, that's my phrase. If you haven't tasted the sawdust of the stage, please just keep your mouth shut because you don't know.
Well, look, everyone's paid for an opinion these days, and the people who aren't paid for an opinion want to offer one anyway, Roger. I mean, that's the problem. And I think you're right. Look, I think it is a generation thing. I think it is a generation that's grown up with everything being aired in public and with everybody being invited to offer their opinion. And whatever you think about these guys, the one thing I will say that I found quite interesting is I didn't see an awful lot of fellow PGA professionals come into Kuchar's aid and standing up and saying, hey, listen, you know what, this guy's a good guy.
True.
Give him a break, which that's true. Interesting to me.
Yeah.
And it may be that I've missed that, and it may be that
the guy's
going to bat for him. But you know, that I found quite interesting because you know, the golf tour, it's a very tight-knit bunch of guys. They travel together, they live together, they spend their days together practicing or playing or competing against each other. Everyone knows who's a good guy and who's not a good guy.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, that bleeds into public perception. You know, you all kind of know who the good guys are and the good guys are, the bad guys
are.
I've always had this impression of Kuchar. I remember him playing as an amateur in the British Open, and the crowds just loving him, absolutely loving him. This is 20-odd years ago. And he just seemed like a really nice kid back then, you know, and I've seen nothing since then to dissuade me of that opinion. But, you know, here he is in headline after headline, day after day, making all the wrong kind of news.
Well, I'm not going to throw the stone, that's for sure, for all the reasons I said. And it is a great point you make. And listen, I'm going to link it a little bit to mine, because I don't know whether you heard it yet, but, you know, when the last episode, Mike, who is a philosopher in some ways, was quoting Gramsci, to us, who teaches us that if the core of a system, of an ecosystem, is such a way, don't expect any different from various branches of that ecosystem. And we were talking about, you know, so has sport got into the Faustian pact, that it's all about money now, it's all about superficial things like likes and retweets and things like that. So don't expect people to be St. Francis of Assisi when they're behaving. Two examples that I want to bring today, Cardiff and Salah. I mean, honestly, I mean, what do you think of this the just tawdriness of this guy still not cold in his grave, and you've got Cardiff, you know, emailing other clubs in the Premier saying where were you offered him in such a way that, you know, the agent was trying to like get a creative auction going, because if you were, then obviously we were sold him above his market value and we're not prepared to pay. Is it Nice he played for? This is happening right now, you know. And I would tend to think that this is an example of the value system being so compromised that people don't realize anymore that this probably isn't in anybody's interests. Even if you do save a few million, it's just not worth it, because, you know, your brand values will be so damaged. It's the whole story, Willie Mackay, the agent, was the pilot able, was the plane able to fly that high? Willie Mackay settling himself into the deal, he wasn't the agent of the player. The whole Cardiff story, and you know, there's guys like Harry Harris that are making a bit of a crusade out of this now. The whole story is truly awful.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a dreadful thing to happen. But, you know, once again, Rog, look, it's it's something that's been played out in the court of public opinion, which, look, 20 years ago, you'd never have heard all this stuff. You just wouldn't. But anyone now who's got an angle goes straight to the press, and the press will print all this stuff gleefully and stir up the pot, because people want to read about it and people want to comment on it and share it and all this sort of stuff. So you can see how this stuff happens. But it's despicable that it should happen over a story such as this. I mean, it's when I read about it, the comment someone made was that Cardiff have shown no class, and that's exactly what it is. There's just zero class. I mean,
yeah.
There are some things bigger. What was it, you know, Shankly? So was it football's not life and death, it's more important than that. But that was tongue in cheek. I mean, this is your example to prove that there are things more important than football, and life and death is one of them. So how you can even start having these conversations now is just, I mean, it's beyond classless, frankly.
Yeah. And the second thing, not linked in any way, but equally troubling, is the story of Declan Rice. The Irish boy, or the Anglo... Oh,
speak for yourself, Rod. Speak for yourself.
Declan Rice, who through his youth career played for the Republic of Ireland, and recently, because of his excellent club performances, has come to the attention of a bigger club, a more attractive suitor, if you will, in the English team. And after weeks of soul searching, has decided to now in the future play for England. Now, I know this has happened before. There's been important players that have changed nationality. I think even the amazing Di Stefano was one of them. But Declan Rice, when he was younger, frankly, wasn't good enough to be considered for England. And Ireland, you know, gave him a home, if you will. And he's progressed. He's been a late developer. He's come on really strong. And all of a sudden, you'd want to play for England. I just can't get my head around that. I don't know what
First of all, Rog, have you ever heard a more English name than Declan, for starters? I mean, that's as English as they come.
Yeah, Old Kent Road. Yeah.
I mean, look, for me, it's a tough. I understand why you're saying that. I really do get that. But I think if you're a young, ambitious soccer player and you get the chance to play for the Republic of Ireland or you get the chance to play for England, unless you are a dyed-in-the-wool Irishman and you identify as such, I can totally understand why you would want to be part of the England team. There's something about it that is, frankly, bigger than any of their performances for the last 50 years. And I guess if you want to play at the top level, play in the top tournaments, you feel like you're going to have a much better chance of doing that playing for England than you are Republic of Ireland. That's not necessarily been true over the last 30 years, but that's a way that people look at it. And so to me, it's not a huge surprise.
But
again, Roger, as I said, I think anyone that would do that doesn't perhaps identify themselves as a full-blown Irishman. Because I think any Irishman that I know would never dream of playing for England, even if they had the choice. And so, to me, it smacks of someone who's grown up as a dual national.
He has, yeah.
Doesn't necessarily have a very strong connection to Ireland in his heart, has grown up playing in the English leagues with English players, and maybe it's been his ambition to play for England this whole time. And he's got the chance. So I understand your view, but I have no problem with it whatsoever.
Well, he potentially could help you win the World Cup, but you know, you've got no conflict of interest at all. But seriously, so I get your point. Like, so let's say I've been a good young player and at 16, 17, I've got the choice of Wales and England, something a little bit like Ryan Giggs a little bit. But this isn't the case. This guy has got years and years of youth caps for the Republic of Ireland. He's not making a decision as an adult now and saying, which one do I feel is the strongest pull in my heart? It's, I've been with this girl for 6-7 years. Raquel Welsh, Google that for anybody of the millennial area there. Raquel Welsh comes along and I'm going to go with her. I just don't think that's right. You know, that they've invested a lot and put a lot into him, and all of a sudden, well, I'm sorry, I want to play in the World Cup. You will understand, won't you?
Well, look, Rog, let me answer that. Two things. One, if you sat Giggsy down quietly in a pub somewhere and said, you never played in a World Cup, do you regret the fact that you could have played in 3 or 4 for England? I'd be very interested in what his honest answer was to that. George Best never played in a World Cup final at the highest level of the game. For me, if not the greatest player of all time, one of the best players of all time. I think for these players today, if you have a chance to play on the biggest stage, to play at the very highest level, in arguably one of the top 3 or 4 most intense spotlights in the world, good luck to him, I say. I'm sure the Irish coaches have put a lot of time into him, but he's paid him back with performances. And
you're a hard man. You're a hard man. You really are.
No, look, I'm not saying I'd make the same choice, but I'm saying I understand that he's made the choice he's making. I totally understand it.
I wonder how his dad feels about it.
Well, yeah, that's probably the better question, actually.
Yeah.
That's probably the bigger tug on the heartstrings.
I think, if you're going to be at that level as a footballer these days, and he is aspiring to that level, then you can get your jollies in the Champions League and the Premiership and things like that. and you say, well, look, I never played in a World Cup, but, you know, I wore the green of Ireland. It's the same argument of Francesco Totti that never left Roma. He was offered to go to Real Madrid various times and he would have a completely different medal cabinet at the end of the day. He didn't. And you know, look how he's revered now. You know, I think he's made a mistake. I think he's made a mistake.
Well, only time will tell. I mean, only time will tell. But as you said, maybe he helps England win the World Cup, in which case it would have been the best decision of his life.
Well, what
but
about
we won't know, Rush.
What about Foden, by the way? He put two goals in the other night. Let's see if he gets a run of games now, because you know that I've got my eye on him. I think he is exactly the kind of player that England need in that midfield.
Well, we shall see. It was two goals against Newport County, so let's not get too excited. But I, like you, think he is definitely one for the future. Well, look, that about wraps it up for this week, Rog.
Yes, it does.
I made it through. I've only been coughing three or four times off mic, so somehow I've made it. But I'm going to go and take some more hot water and honey and lemon and soothe my aching throat.
So the next guest we're going to have, if we can get the time zones correct, we're going to go transcontinental. We're going to go to North America, aren't we?
We are. We're going to talk to a dear friend of mine, Mark Yusko, who's not a sportsman, but he's a big sports fan. Big fan of Notre Dame. He's a big fan of American football. He lives in Raleigh-Durham in the Chapel Hill area, North Carolina, where all the big universities are, North Carolina, Duke, all those big franchises, and he's a big sports fan. So we're going to talk to him about American sports
That'll be fascinating.
It will be. He's a lot of fun, and he's got opinions on all sorts of things, so it'll be fun to talk to Mark. But in the meantime, if you do want to follow us on Twitter, please do at EntertainedR. Tell your friends about the podcast, rate and review us on iTunes, and do share this with anyone you think might enjoy it as a sports fan. If you want to follow me, you can do so by clicking at TTMYGH on Twitter.
And if you want to follow myself, it's RPM Como, as in Lake Como.
As in the lake. Rog, as always, it's been fun.
Splendid.
It's good to be
great
back.
To have you back.
I'll talk to you
great
next time.
Great to have you back. Take care. Bye-bye.
See you, mate.